Chapter 4. First Steps in a Business Career. The city received Mike with the same aloofness with which the more western portion of London had welcomed him on the previous day. Nobody seemed to look at him. He was permitted to alight at St. Paul's and make his way up Queen Victoria Street without any demonstration. He followed the human stream till he reached the Mansion House and eventually found himself at the massive building of the New Asiatic Bank, Limited. The difficulty now was to know how to make an effective entrance. There was the bank, and here was he. How had he better set about breaking it to the authorities that he had positively arrived and was ready to start earning his £4.10 per mensem? Inside, the bank seemed to be in a state of some confusion. Men were moving about in an apparently irresolute manner. Nobody seemed actually to be working. As a matter of fact, the business of a bank does not start very early in the morning. Mike had arrived before things had really begun to move. As he stood near the doorway, one or two panting figures rushed up the steps and flung themselves at a large book which stood on the counter near the door. Mike was to come to know this book well. In it, if you were an employé of the New Asiatic Bank, you had to inscribe your name every morning. It was removed at 10 sharp to the accountant's room, and if you reached the bank a certain number of times in the year too late to sign, bang went your bonus. After a while, things began to settle down. The stir and confusion gradually ceased. All down the length of the bank, figures could be seen, seated on stools and writing hieroglyphics in large letters. A benevolent-looking man with spectacles and a straggling grey beard crossed the gangway close to where Mike was standing. Mike put the thing to him as man to man.
"Could you tell me," he said, what I'm supposed to do? I've just joined the bank."
The benevolent man stopped and looked at him with a pair of mild blue eyes.
"I think perhaps that your best plan would be to see the manager," he said. "Yes, I should certainly do that. He will tell you what work you have to do. If you will permit me, I will show you the way."
"It's awfully good of you," said Mike.
He felt very grateful. After his experience of London, it was a pleasant change to find someone who really seemed to care what happened to him. His heart warmed to the benevolent man.
"It feels strange to you, perhaps, at first, Mr. Jackson. Mr. Jackson, my name is Waller. I've been in the city some time, but I can still recall my first day. But one shakes down. One shakes down quite quickly. Here is the manager's room. If you go in, he will tell you what to do."
"Thanks awfully," said Mike.
"Not at all."
He ambled off on the quest which Mike had interrupted, turning as he went to bestow a mild smile of encouragement on the new arrival. There was something about Mr. Waller which reminded Mike pleasantly of the White Knight in Alice Through the Looking Glass. Mike knocked at the managerial door and went in. Two men were sitting at the table. The one facing the door was writing when Mike went in. He continued to write all the time he was in the room. Conversation between other people in his presence had apparently no interest for him, nor was it able to disturb him in any way. The other man was talking into a telephone. Mike waited till he'd finished. Then he coughed. The man turned round. Mike had thought, as he looked at his back and heard his voice, that something about his appearance or his way of speaking was familiar. He was right. The man in the chair was Mr. Bickersdyke, the cross-screen pedestrian. These reunions are very awkward. Mike was frankly unequal to the situation. Smith, in his place, would have opened the conversation and relaxed the tension with some remark on the weather or the state of the crops. Mike merely stood wrapped in silence, as in a garment. That the recognition was mutual was evident from Mr. Bickersdyke's look. But apart from this, he gave no sign of having already had the pleasure of making Mike's acquaintance. He merely stared at him as if he were a blot on the arrangement of the furniture, and said, "Well?" Most difficult parts to play in real life, as well as on the stage, are those in which no business is arranged for the performer. It was all very well for Mr. Bickersdyke. He had been discovered sitting.
but Mike had had to enter, and he wished now that there was something he could do instead of merely standing and speaking.
"I've come," was the best speech he could think of. It was not a good speech. It was too sinister. He felt that even as he said it. It was the sort of thing Mephistopheles would have said to Faust by way of opening conversation. And he was not sure either whether he ought not to have added "sir." Apparently such subtleties of address were not necessary, for Mr. Bickersdyke did not start up and shout, "This language to me," or anything of that kind. He merely said,
"Oh, and who are you?"
"Jackson," said Mike.
It was irritating, this assumption on Mr. Bickersdyke's part that they had never met before.
"Jackson? Ah, yes, you've joined the staff."
Mike rather liked this way of putting it. It lent a certain dignity to the proceedings, making him feel like some important person for whose services there had been strenuous competition. He seemed to see the bank's directors being reassured by the chairman.
"I'm happy to say, gentlemen, that our profits for the past year are 3,000,006, 2 and tuppence halfpenny. Cheers. And, impressively, that we have finally succeeded in inducing Mr. Mike Jackson."
Sensation.
To join the staff.
Frantic cheers in which the chairman joined.
"Yes," he said. Mr. Bickersdyke pressed a bell on the table beside him and, picking up a pen, began to write. Of Mike he took no further notice, leaving that toy of fate standing stranded in the middle of the room. After a few moments, one of the men in fancy dress, whom Mike had seen hanging about the gangway, and whom he afterwards found to be messengers, appeared. Mr. Bickersdyke looked up.
"Ask Mr. Bannister to step this way," he said.
The messenger disappeared, and presently the door opened again to admit a shock-headed youth with paper cuff protectors round his wrist.
"This is Mr. Jackson, a new member of the staff. He will take your place in the postage department. You will go into the cash department under Mr. Waller. Kindly show him what he has to do."
Mike followed Mr. Bannister out. On the other side of the door, the shock-headed one became communicative.
"Phew!" he said, mopping his brow. "That's the sort of thing which gives me the pip. When William came and said old Bick wanted to see me, I said to him, 'William, my boy, my number's up. This is the sack.' I made certain that Rossiter had run me in for something. He'd been waiting for a chance to do it for weeks, only I've been as good as gold and haven't given it to him. I pity you going into the postage. There's one thing, though. If you can stick it for about a month, you'll get through all right. Men are always leaving for the East, and then you get shunted on to another department and the next new man goes into the postage. That's the best of this place. It's not like one of those banks where you stay in London all your life. You only have 3 years here, and then you get your orders and go to one of the branches in the East, where you're the dickens of a big pot, straight away with a big screw and a dozen native johnnies under you. Bit of all right, that. I shan't get my orders for another 2.5 years and more, worse luck. Still, it's something to look forward to." "Who's Rossiter?" asked Mike.
"The head of the postage department. Fussy little brute. Won't leave you alone. Always trying to catch you on the hop. There's one thing, though. The work in the postage is pretty simple. You can't make many mistakes if you're careful. It's mostly entering letters and stamping them."
They turned in at the door in the counter and arrived at a desk which ran parallel to the gangway. There was a high rack running along it on which were several ledgers. Tall, green-shaded electric lamps gave it rather a cosy look. As they reached the desk, a little man with short black whiskers buzzed out from behind a glass screen where there was another desk.
"Where have you been, Bannister? Where have you been? You must not leave your work in this way. There are several letters waiting to be entered. Where have you been?"
"Mr. Bickersdyke sent for me," said Bannister, with the calm triumph of one who trumps an ace.
Yes, very well, I see. But get to work, get to work. Who is this?"
"This is a new man. He's taking my place. I've been moved on to the cash."
Is your name Smith?"
asked Mr. Rossiter, turning to Mike. Mike corrected the rash guess and gave his name. It struck him as a curious coincidence that he should be asked if his name was Smith, of all others. And not that it's an uncommon name.
"Mr. Bickersdyke told me to expect a Mr. Smith.
Well, perhaps there are two new men. Mr. Bickersdyke knows we're short-handed in this department. But come along, Bannister, come along. Show Jackson what he has to do. We must get on. There's no time to waste.
He buzzed back to his lair. Bannister grinned at Mike. He was a cheerful youth. His normal expression was a grin.
That's a sample of Rossiter, he said. You'd think from the fuss he's made that the business of the place was at a standstill till we got to work. Perfect rot. There's never anything to do here till after lunch, except checking the stamps and petty cash, and I've done that ages ago. There are three letters. You may as well enter them. It all looks like work. But you'll find the best way is to wait till you get a couple of dozen or so, and then work them off in a batch. But if you see Rossiter about, then start stamping something or writing something, or he'll run you in for neglecting your job. He's a nut. I'm jolly glad I'm under old Waller now. He's the pick of the bunch. The other heads of department are all nuts, and Bickersdyke's the nuttiest of the lot. Now look here, this is all you got to do. I'll just show you, and then you can manage by yourself. I have to be shunting off to my own work in a minute.